Yeah, man, we're at El Pacifico, and this is the last night of our 10P to 1A or 1A to 4A show, depending upon where you are. This is it. This is the last of what has been a six-year run here in the overnight, third shift, late night. And beginning tomorrow night, it is a 7P on the West Coast, 10P on the East Coast start. And beginning tomorrow night, we will do our very best to let you know what affiliates are with us. We'll do our very best to bring you back up to speed. We are going to be running a series of Comedy Gold shows through the 8th of July. And on the 8th of July, we relaunch with our new live show. Now, we're going to be on the air tomorrow night. Don't even worry about it. We're going to be doing video cast updates. Don't even worry about that if you have a backstage pass. And we are also going to be experimenting over the short haul, experimenting with free video casts. That's right. You heard me right. For those of you who've never been BSPs but often wondered what it looks like when I'm sitting here doing this, you're going to see it, whether you like it or not.
Well, they don't have to tune in.
Well, that's true. They don't have to tune in.
You say whether you like it or not, it's almost as if you're kicking down the door and forcing it on them, and I don't think anyone would want that.
You say that with a smile on your face.
Well, I'm trying to be nice, but I don't think anyone wants to see Phil Henry walk into their living room and then just spill it all out on the floor like the little Kintner boy.
Jeez, Margaret.
Come, man, that's out of jaws.
What do you mean, jeez, Margaret?
Well, at least smile when you say that.
Why? Because I'm telling you the truth. You walk into people's homes like that, Phil, and it spills out like the Kintner boy.
The little boy from Jaws that got eaten by the shark.
No, he didn't really get eaten up.
Well, that's just it. He didn't really get eaten up. What I'm saying is, Phil, sometimes your show comes spilling into people's homes as if it is a dismembered...
A dismembered human coming out of a shark's guts.
You said it, I didn't. You said that, I didn't.
Yeah, well, that was you talking about, Ms. Gray. Talking about Mr. Henry.
Never mind. If it's such a disastrous, disgusting, and horrific thing to see, then why would you be a part of it?
So that I can bear witness, okay?
Oh, yeah, right.
Now, excuse me, yes. So I can bear witness, as Victor Klemperer's memoirs, I bear witness.
Wait, hold the phone.
No, I bear witness.
Hold the phone. Victor Klemperer, a guy who wrote a book observing the Nazi Reich, a Jewish guy in Germany, and you're comparing you witnessing this radio show to that?
Yes, you. I'm not saying you're a Nazi. I'm saying I'm bearing witness.
Well, that's been a little bit silly.
No one asked you. Excuse me, but I belched because...
Margaret.
No, I belched because of him.
No. I'm not accepting that behavior at all. I want it to stop.
Well, you'll have to tell him to stop.
I bear witness.
That's bad. That's real bad.
Well, what happened to you? What happened to you? Did you get scared or something the other night? What happened? Were you watching that movie? What movie was that? Oh, the Beach Girls and the Monster. Robert was watching it. Now he has a stutter. I told you.
I'm not going to get scared. A rubber-headed monster, forget it.
That movie the other night, that we did our Saturday night movie, folks. It was, we did, actually, that last one was fantastic. The Hitchhiker?
I didn't see it.
Oh, The Hitchhiker was great. I'd never seen it before. It was based on a true story. It was based on a true story.
Was it based on a true story?
Yeah, it was based on a true story.
Based on a true story.
All right. It was awesome. It was a flick with Edmund O'Brien and, now hold on, Frank Lovejoy, Edmund O'Brien, and William Tallman. And it's a true story about a guy in 1950 by the name of William Cook, Billy Cook, who went on a 22-day murder spree. He killed six people, including three children. I mean, the guy was before Charles Starkweather, you know, folks, You know, look, America has had its serial killers and spree killers going all the way back to the revolutionary days. One of these days we'll bring back up those two brothers that were stalking the colonial woods of the southern portion of the United States through the 1760s and on into the beginnings of the Revolutionary War. These two brothers that were murdering people and throwing them in rivers, they were eventually taken down by a posse, literally a citizen's posse, went out looking for these guys. But this guy, William Cook, and the movie The Hitchhiker is based, and I thought it was a tremendous film because it it showed the last of the people that he kidnapped. He didn't kill them. They were two men that were going on a hunting trip into Mexico. And he kidnapped these guys, and he took them into Mexico, and where he was eventually apprehended by the Mexican authorities. But the thing that I found interesting about this was the reality of something like this happening in 1950. And the other thing is, if those of you who are members of my generation...
Oh, not a baby boomer story.
Hold on for a minute, will you, Margaret? You know, you're no spring chicken.
Yeah, you're not a chicken in anything like that.
I'm not a chicken. Are you calling me... You're saying I'm not gutless.
No, you're not what Mr. Henry said.
Hold on. The song by The Doors, Riders on the Storm. You remember that song?
Yeah, I know that one. The Rider on the Storm. When the...
Yeah, there's a rider on the storm and a rider on the storm.
Okay, don't sing it, please. In the song Riders on the Storm, there's a lyric that says, there's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad. Well, that's, and then the song goes on to say, if you give this man a ride, sweet memory will die, killer on the road. That is based on William Cook.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Well, how do you know that? How do you know it's not based on Charles Manson?
It's not based on Charles Manson. It's based, you know, Jim Morrison was a very well-read man. He read a lot. He read a lot of literature. He read a lot of fiction. He read a lot of nonfiction. It is based on William Cook, because the people that he killed, he was a hitchhiker, and they picked him up. These people willingly picked this man up. He got into the car with them, and the next thing you know, and the first people that he killed was this couple with their three children. So, you know, this is a guy that, this was just a bad man. When I was a kid, there was a commercial, and some of you guys may remember, does anybody remember Bardahl Motor Oil? B-A-R-D-A-H-L. I think they probably still sell it. Bardahl Motor Oil had a commercial on for a long time, and the commercial was, don't pick up a hitchhiker in the rain. And the hitchhiker in the rain was dirt and grime. So Bardahl was essentially saying, when you get dirt and grime in your engine, it's like you're picking up a hitchhiker in the rain. Well, the message was very clear, and it was, by the way, it was a message that was well thought out by the ad agency that Bardahl had hired to create their national image. And at that time, hitchhikers in the rain, they represented something very evil, something murderous. And so Bardahl used that to their advantage. Don't pick up a hitchhiker in the rain, meaning the dirt and grime thing.
What has this got to do with Jim Morrison?
Yeah.
Will you hold on? What do you mean, Jim Morrison? It's about the hitchhiker, William Cook.
Oh.
Oh, that guy. We're still talking about him?
Yes. And the Bardahl commercial, what I'm trying to tell you is the Bardahl commercial was based upon the country's fear and the resonating anxieties created by the William Cook story, which resonated down through the years. We don't even remember the story, but we remember the effect that it had on the country. The hitchhiker in the rain. Don't pick up a hitchhiker. It was William Cook, Billy Cook, who was picked up by people and murdered them. And so that was the image, and that's the image that Jim Morrison used in that song, Riders on the Storm. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Phil Hendry.
Very nice.
All right, we're going to come back here. A couple of stories. Let's uplift it a little bit. We've got Sandra Bullock's new dress.
She's got a great-looking butt in that dress. There's no question about it.
Would you ask him to clean that up?
Bud, please, okay?
No.
Hold on, okay? We'll be back to talk about Sandra... Well, she does have a nice look. We'll be back to talk about Sandra Bullock's acting on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
There we go. Welcome back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. I hit a button, and when you hit the wrong button around here, man, things happen. It's in that way, it's kind of like the mafia, you know? If you hit the wrong button, you know?
I don't understand.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they call a hitman in the mafia, button.
Yeah, the button man.
If you hit the wrong button, well, I don't think they're going to hit the wrong button in the mafia, are they?
I just for some, the guy that the button...
Well,
I'm sorry.
You know, when you start to try to get too fancy, it really...
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the world-famous Phil Henry Show number, and I know we have David G. Hall on the line who wants to discuss with something, discuss with me something that I said just moments ago, which is kind of the way he is. I know he's over at the radio convention there at the L.A. Convention Center. What convention is this, David?
It's just programmers getting together here at the convention center, Phil, and some of the salespeople to address certain problems. The problem that I've got is just before the show went on the air, I've got a bunch of people walking up to me and asking me, is Henry trying to commit wholesale murder of our industry? And I had three people...
What is that based on?
Well, you know what it's based on. It's based on that Variety article that you were talking about during the pre-show. So I've got people in the radio business walking up to me tonight saying, is Phil Henry your partner? Does he hate us so much that he's trying to commit homicide? He's trying to literally kill people in the radio business.
What is that supposed to mean?
What it means is you were on the air talking about radio digs its own grave. You were talking about that Variety article.
Yeah.
Would you please not yell in my ear?
David, he's been doing that. I don't know what the problem is.
I'm not yelling in your ear.
Yeah, you did. You went, yeah, like that.
I apologize.
All right. So you're going to murder, you know, if there's a dead body tonight.
What? How am I murdering people in the radio business?
You're going to give somebody a heart attack. You keep talking about this article.
The article's right there in Variety.
Yeah, I know. I can read.
Okay, and it says, radio digs its own grave as cultural currents shift. It is an indictment of an entire industry in Variety, not in Radio Inc., not in Al Peterson's column, not in any radio trade, in Variety.
I understand that. So what's the point of you bringing it up and trying to cause radio executives tonight at this function that I'm at and at others across the country to leap out of windows head first?
I doubt seriously if I'm going to get anybody to do that.
Really? Well, if they're listening to you, it's one thing for that thing to be in Variety. It's another thing for a guy in the radio business to bring it up. You're bringing it up to listeners. We're going to have people calling now who are listeners, not radio executives, listeners, amateurs, who are going to be calling up radio executives saying, hey, yeah, did you see the article? This and that, you know? And the next thing, we're going to be forced to sit there and listen to an amateur's opinion, Phil, which I don't necessarily think is a constructive way of dealing with this problem.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, as long as you can buy a Variety magazine on a newsstand, and you can anywhere, people, amateurs, as you call them, are going to read these articles. And this is a very important article. And I need the audience listening to me right now to understand something.
You don't have to go into it again. You did the whole thing in a pre-show.
Well, I didn't do it on the regular show. That this is a very significant piece of journalism here, folks. What's happened here is that Variety, which is a trade journal primarily aimed at television and film people, doesn't really do a lot of reporting on radio. It does profiles occasionally. It may talk about this or that, but this is a column that has been devoted to the entire industry digging its own grave, essentially saying that radio, unlike television, which gets it and has a multitude of outlets and channels and programming, or film, in other words, it's basically saying radio, of all of the mass media, doesn't understand what's happening in the culture with digital, with internet, with the ability of people to... Look at this, man. I got somebody calling me right in the middle of my show. That's not going to happen.
Was that your phone going off?
Yes, it was.
Why don't you turn the thing off?
I'd forgotten to.
Listen, yeah, Jay, how you doing? Yeah, I'm talking to him now. I got guys walking up and saying, is he trying to kill me? I said...
Who?
You know the guy from Rhode Island, two of the station owners. I'm not going to mention their names.
Is he trying to kill me?
Yeah, hold on. I'm talking to him now. Two of these guys were, does he want me to die? Does he want me to really die? I said, no, he doesn't want you to die. I said, well, that's what he's doing. He's trying to kill us.
I'm not trying to kill anybody. What I'm basically saying is that this is an article that is saying about our industry It's over, man. Unless you guys get your act together, things are really... You know, turn that phone off, will you, bud?
Turn that thing off.
We're turning it off. And that is the that's the essential point there.
Well, you know, people walking up to me and want you, which... Yeah, I know. I got a guy crying. Hold on a second, yeah? Did you hear that? Did you hear that, Phil?
Who is that?
That's Jason Eltru. You know, he owns a station down in San Diego. He's crying like a baby, Jason.
What are you going to do it?
He's crying like a baby.
And well, that's too bad.
Well, you tell him. He just said it's too bad.
You're going to do it.
Sorry, Jason.
So, what do you want me to tell him?
Tell him anything you want. I don't care. Thanks for calling.
Oh, he's treating me like some bitch that...
So you hang up on the man as your business partner. He's got nothing to say. He's got nothing to say. As usual, he's got nothing to say. He's calling me up and telling me I shouldn't be talking the way I'm talking because it's giving guys heart attacks. Well, there it is. There's the article. There's the headline. Radio digs its own grave as cultural currents shift. The major music business, the new music business, is built upon radio. It depends upon it. There's a fiction that we still live in a monoculture. This concept has been blown apart on television where there are 500 channels available. But listen to this. But the Luddites in radio still believe the internet didn't happen and that we're all prisoners of the dial where there are few stations and little innovation.
What's a Luddite?
A Luddite is essentially some clown that doesn't know machines exist. The Luddites in radio still believe the internet didn't happen. There are radio alternatives, Pandora and the forthcoming iTunes radio. Please don't confuse Spotify and radio and Deezer and Daisy with radio. They're nothing of the sort. Anyway, there's a whole... What is Deezer and Daisy?
I don't know. I'll ask my son, but I think those are different ways that you can load, or whatever they call it, load down?
Well, download.
Download.
Download the music, yeah.
All right, but in other words, they're ways of accessing... traditional radio content in ways other than going to radio. That's the whole thing. And that's what's happening. And that's what we've been talking about for 10 years on our show. That's what we've been talking about during our pre-shows. And that's what we're letting the consumers know. And really, when I talk to people like wherever it is, you know, talking to them about radio, I'm talking to people I suspect who are really, really active listeners. A lot of them probably work in the business. And so I'm sort of preaching to the choir. The average guy... doesn't know from, he flips his radio on, and if it sounds like crap, he brings his iPod the next day. Or he gets a subscription to Sirius or XM. But if he flips on the radio and he hears nothing but garbage coming out of that thing, for instance, nothing but nonstop conservative talk, I mean, that's what murdered talk radio, conservative talk radio, and I'm not saying it's because it's a conservative point of view. What I'm saying is, the sameness of the same point of view over and over and over and over and over again, murdering every other kind of spoken word radio, and that's what did it, man. And if a guy gets into his car and he flips the radio on and he hears that crap, he's gone, he gets his iPod or whatever, and he's on to the next thing. You know, and the reason why I talk about it is I've got this platform. I might as well start talking about it.
Yeah, you said you don't even care what happens to people.
I don't care. I don't care what happens to radio. I only care what happens to me. There are radio alternatives, it says here. Streaming services are retail replacements, lending libraries, wherein for $10 a month, you can go into the store and borrow anything you want as long as you return it. Also, you're not limited to one album at a time. The radio alternatives represent market fragmentation because internet in the car is not yet here on a widespread basis. They've had the impact on car listening. Then again, we've experienced tapes in the car, CDs and iPod hookups. Terrestrial radio listenership is not close to what it once was. Radio used to dominate. It's still the biggest player, but its market share has receded dramatically. And don't worry about it. It'll keep on receding dramatically. Because right now, the guys we got running the show in this business, these guys are too stupid. Believe me when I tell you, folks, this is not the generation to turn it around. It's going to continue to erode until we finally do get some executives or leadership in our industry where they know what the hell is going on. All right, so there is your education in the radio business.
Yes, and good luck, Phil, with your future, because these people...
Yeah, they're going to... They'll do a... What is it called? A ball.
Yeah, they'll ball you, man.
They'll ball me? You mean blackball?
Yeah.
Ball me. We'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show. Bill Cowher crashes his Mercedes-Benz in New York City. How about that, huh? And grab your Kleenex, baby. A dog, that's right, a dog, buries another dog in what some think is a sign of mourning. Buries a dead dog, like a burial, like a funeral, like a religious... Anyway, we'll talk about it. We come back, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What are you talking about? No dog has a religion.
Well, unless it's, I don't know, what do they consider...
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This boating accident at Lake Powell, is this, bud?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't know.
Well, turn the fan off, will you please?
It's hot in here, Phil. It feels like it's living hell in here.
I understand, but we have to have the fan off because it's making noise.
Yeah, I know, man, but I'm sweating like an ape in here.
We are all sweating like... We're sweating like animals in the jungle. Is that what you want? Is that what you foresee? For us to sweat?
I'm not asking you guys to sweat. I'm just saying it's a studio. It's summertime. It gets warm. I'm sorry, all right? I'm sweating, too.
Well, I'm a woman, and I think I'm deserving of some comfort.
Why?
What did you say?
Well, I'm just saying, why?
Because I'm a woman, and because... Never mind.
She's a female, so, you know, there is a little extra comfort that should be taken into consideration.
No, I don't understand why, though.
Yeah, why?
Because that's what you do. When you're a gentleman, you think of the comfort of the ladies first. That's what we do. That's what we do. And that's what we do. Okay?
Don't make any sense. There ought to be reason for stuff.
There's some stuff that we just don't ask reasons about. Why do you pull a chair out for a lady? You just do. Okay?
Yeah, a lot of people don't do that anymore.
No, I know. Believe me, I know that. You want to know who I hear about that from? Women. Go out on a date with a woman and pull her chair out. You know what you're going to get? You're going to get... First of all, if the hostess is a female, she's going to say, oh, my God, I swear to God, they're going to think you're the greatest guy in the world. Try it sometime. It's happened to me. I don't know how many times you go into a restaurant with a female, you pull her chair out, which is what I was taught to do from years ago. I'm not saying I'm something special. It's just you were taught that. The whole generation of guys coming up now, they don't know this stuff. Well, here's one other thing you guys don't know. The women who, you know, because...
Well, what, are you going out with teenagers now, Phil?
No, I'm not dating teenagers, no. Women in their 30s, okay? You pull her chair out, and they look at you like, oh, my God, what a gentleman, and oh. And they talk about it. Guys today are the biggest slobs. So?
But you figure if you learn how to do that?
Yeah, if you learn how to do that, maybe things go a little bit more your way. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know about that, man.
I'm telling you. I've seen it happen a million times. Pull a chair out, and they're, oh, God, you'd never see guys do that anymore. It's just so amazing, and oh, my Lord, and this and that and something else. Because most guys, I don't know what it is, guys today, not a lot of them, but you know how it is. Guys today are pretty much still their mama's little boy. I don't know how else to put it, but they got bigger issues than how to treat women, you know. They just figure it's all bitches bad, and have you heard that song, Bitches Bad, by, I think it's Kendrick, I don't know who it's, but Lupe Fiasco.
Who?
Lupe Fiasco.
Who's he?
He's the guy that does the song Bitch is Bad.
Yeah, Lupe, pretty good.
Okay. Well, it's a great song because he talks about how these messages of bitch and what... He talks about what bitch means and what bad means. Bad to a man could mean that she is just unprincipled and immoral. Bad to a female could mean that she's a badass. She kicks ass and she can hang with the guys. But it depends on the message when it finally arrives at the generation coming up, the little girl that hears that. Is she bad because she's immoral? Is she bad because she kicks ass? And what does all that mean? And what is the message to the little boy? So in the song, in Lupe Fiasco's song, he talks about that. And he talks about how there's no parenting in a lot of situations. There's no one there who is sort of acting as the interpreter of this stuff as they hear it coming out of the radio or the television. So the kids are left to be mentored by the rappers, the hip-hop people who are just simply trying to make an impression for entertainment purposes. They're not necessarily there to teach Sesame Street, you know.
Well, I don't know what you're saying, but it does sound important.
Well, that, isn't that nice?
Yeah, do a column on it, Ms. Gray.
I'm going to do a column on it. I would like you to explain what you're talking about later, but I think it's important that...
How are you going to do a column on it if you don't know what I'm talking about?
Because it sounds important, Phil.
Yeah, it doesn't sound important, Miss Henry.
Well, isn't that just nice? It sounds important. You guys don't know what I'm talking about.
Not really.
I'm talking about language. I'm talking about what the perception of language and what the word means and what it means in the culture and what it means to a little kid and what it means to the person who is singing it. You know, there's a saying that there are three authors to a song. You've ever heard this?
No.
There are three people that write a song, not one. Three. Three people. Who are those three, Bud? Bud Dickman, I'll start with you.
The three people who write the song?
Yes. Who are the three?
Lennon, McCartney.
Lennon and McCartney.
Are you some kind of a jackball? What do you mean?
What do you mean, Lennon and McCartney?
You said a three.
No, 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 no. I'll tell you.
Well, I wanted to guess.
No, 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 no. The three people that write the song, first there's the person who actually wrote it. But he hears it a certain way. He wrote the song. It's very personal to him or her. And so they hear it in their head, if you will. They hear it when they play it. They hear it as they sort of create it, the lyrics. So that's one person. The second person who writes that song, though, is the performer. Because that person has taken that song, and now they've created something different with it. They hear it a certain way. They're interpreting it a certain way. They're singing it a certain way. They're playing it a certain way. And that becomes an authorship in and of its own.
Well, now, who's the third?
The third person who writes a song is the one who hears it. We hear it a certain way. It comes into our heads, and we experience it in a way that may be completely different from the way it was written or the way it was performed.
That's the biggest load of gobbledygook that I ever did hear.
You know, I don't usually agree with Bud, but...
Well, all right, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with you guys. If that's what you think, it's gobbledygook, huh?
Oh, Phil, that's the biggest load, fragrant though it may be, that ever dropped out of a cow's...
ass.
That's right.
Well, you guys can say that if you want, but I happen to think it's a brilliant observation. I didn't create that. It was something that I read. I think it's a great observation. And so it goes with that song, Bitch is Bad. That's what the guy's trying to say. It's a brilliant song, and you should hear it. It's called Bitch is Bad. It's by Lupe Fiasco. It's available now on Fernman Records and Tapes.
Really?
No, I just made that up. All right.
Fernman Records and Tapes.
I'll call up iTunes, or not iTunes. But...
I made it up. There's no such thing as Fernman Records and Tapes. Who cares? Go download it illegally someplace.
Wow, man.
That goes against everything you stand for.
Yeah, well, you think I'm going to... I've had people sit there and say to me, friends of mine will say, oh, wow, man. I'll go, well, like, what happened? Well, nothing, but I downloaded a bunch of your stuff last night, man. I go... off of my site? He goes, no, I'm sorry, man. Somebody had turned me on to... I go, dude, you know, it's okay, but I mean, you're screwing... No, I know that, man. I know I'm screwing you. I didn't mean to do that, man. I'm really sorry. It's just that it was too... And I said, well, look, dude, it's only $10 a month. Yeah, I know, but I don't have the money right now. Oh, give me a break. You don't have the money right now. So I get it, you know. Unfortunately, you know, we have to protect ourselves, and we do. But I don't want to talk about that, Robert. You're going to go and find the song wherever you find it.
Probably on YouTube or something like that.
It's on YouTube, yeah. And there's an official version of it, I'm sure, on YouTube. I haven't looked. But it's worth it to hear. And as I said, it's terrific. There's a lot of hip-hop that's out now that I really like and I think has... even Lil Wayne with that Mirror.
Well, Mirror, I think, is Lil Wayne's attempt at being... thoughtful, poetic, reflective, but in the end, it's more of the same filthy, sweating, jewels in the teeth. Got it.
Yeah, you're attracted to him.
There's something sexually compelling about Lil Wayne, yes.
You know, I'm saying you want to be taken by him?
Did I say I want to be taken by him?
You know, Margaret, you're the only woman I've ever heard who openly expresses, in your own way, a desire to be violently taken by a man.
How dare you?
Am I wrong?
You're wrong most of the time.
Yeah.
No, Miss Gray, you're talking about a guy with a cucumber.
I didn't say a man with a... I said cucumber sauce, you imbeciles.
Well, the fact of the matter is, now here's Lil Wayne.
What about Lil Wayne?
You think it'd be neat.
What's wrong with me thinking of him sweating on me?
Oh, my God. So that cucumber sauce is Little Wayne's sweat.
You know, you're such children. You don't understand women. Did I say sweat? I said that Little Wayne, I don't know. There's something about the spit coming out of his mouth.
Oh!
God.
Don't look at me like I'm a freak. You're not a woman.
So you want him to drool on you?
You want Little Wayne to drool on you?
I didn't say drool.
I can tell. That's what you mean, though.
All right, so what? You know what, Phil? If you want to know what's going on, talk to a bunch of women. Don't sit here in a daisy chain with these guys.
Hey, watch your language, okay?
Watch my language? You're talking about Little Wayne drooling on me.
Don't you want him to do that?
My husband's listening to this. I'd rather you put it another way.
What about your son?
My son is not allowed to listen to this garbage. Thank God I'm that good of a mother. My son, Jason J. Delmonico, is not allowed to listen to this crap that you do.
Thank you very much, Margaret.
Well, Phil, you asked for it, talking about Little Wayne drooling on me.
But am I wrong or am I right?
You're right, but you don't need... Well.
Yeah, see, he's right. You don't want him to talk about it or anything like that.
But I don't need you to reinforce what I already stated, you jack ball on steroids.
Well, I think that Lil Wayne drooling on you, you know, he might have like some kind of disease or something like that.
He's not that bad of a disease. Lil Wayne's problem is he drinks all that cough medicine, I think. All right.
What?
I don't know. All right, coming back, we're going to be talking about Bill Cowher cracking his car up in New York.
Down a joke or something?
Isn't that funny?
What?
Did he tell it a joke? No, he crashed the car.
Oh, what? Yeah, man, you knew. No, I didn't.
Yeah, you knew is right. We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Truth
so Little
is
Wayne,
our bitch. The Phil Hendry show.
He drooled on me. Unlimited drool.
Friday night, we told you about a boating accident Thursday night in Utah. I don't know why there's a lot about the human condition and the human experience on this planet that fascinates me, especially as we get closer as people, as communities, as nation states, as nations, as the global village is active and getting more village-like as we go along here, you know. So we know more about each other, and I get fascinated and equally, you know, sort of saddened or overjoyed by things that I see. Now, one of the things that I've been reading up on, for whatever reason, maybe it's because we see these stories this time of year, are boating accidents, drinking. Bobby Dooley, by the way, folks, has a new fan page on Twitter, Bobby Fans, and her and Steve were up at Lake Bass for the annual Lake Dash. And I'm looking at boats on fire and people, in the water. And
well, they had four boats sink?
Four boats sink, and everybody's just, you know, getting hammered waiting for a rescue. But anyway, this boat crash on Lake Powell in Utah, for me, was an example of just what are people thinking? What's going on out there, man? Now, this is one of the most tragic things. What happened on Thursday night was a boat, I will not call it a speedboat, but a powerboat, with a number of children on board and adults, ran into a houseboat, a deadly boating accident that left at least two dead. The reason why they say two dead, on Friday night there was one dead, and that was the mother, the wife of the man who was piloting the boat. I mean, you can't even imagine what the devastation this is bringing. Two women were missing. Now one woman is missing because they found one of the women, and they did this by way of sonar. Divers going into Lake Powell, and on the 23rd, which was Sunday, the body of a 29-year-old woman was recently recovered by divers thanks to the advanced robot scanner that found her remains at the bottom of the lake. You may know, you may not know, the human body We often think of human bodies when they are deceased, people when they're deceased, as floating. Bodies don't float until certain gases form that lift the body up through the water. So bodies are going to be below the surface of the water for a while until they surface as the result of those gases forming. Or they can be snagged on some underwater debris, whether it's a piece of vegetation or some man-made piece of pipe or perhaps even a boat that had sunk earlier. This poor young woman was found by these sonar robot that they were using. Now, the accident leaves the body of one more missing woman somewhere in the lake. Although there is no concrete evidence that the remaining crash victim is dead, police presume she is no longer alive, so the search has become a body recovery mission.
Why don't they think she's alive?
Because, you know, they would have found her by now, man. I mean, if she was alive, she would be on the surface of the water. If she wasn't on the shore someplace, she would at least be on the surface of the water. They would have found her by now. The body of 29-year-old Valerie Ray Bradshaw has since been taken to a medical investigator's office after being retrieved from Lake Powell's main channel by a team of divers. As for the cause of the deadly boating accident, experts who have started an official investigation believe that one boat driver was too distracted by children playing on his motorboat. His attention was diverted long enough for him not to be able to move in time before crashing into a much larger houseboat. The man, Adrian Jackman, lost his 57-year-old wife, Marilyn, in the accident, while his daughter, Jessica, and her friend, Valerie, were swept into the lake. So this young lady, Valerie, was the friend. His daughter is still missing. You imagine the hell that this man's in right now? Police are expectant that the body of 22-year-old Jessica Jackman may similarly be found this week using the same sonar technology and search robot. According to earlier reports from the boating crash in Lake Powell, the search, excuse me, folks, I'm having computer issues. The search had been called off toward the end of the week, work week last week, but was scheduled to begin again this weekend. Hopefully the victim's families and friends are coping through this difficult time as officers continue to search for the remaining missing passengers in the accident. Well, there's only one that's missing, and that is the young lady, Jessica Jackman, the daughter of the guy that was piloting the boat, man. And the bummer of this is exactly what we thought, because if you got a powerboat with a bunch of people on board and there's a houseboat, well, what the hell? I mean, a houseboat is not exactly tearing ass through the lake. And these cats get distracted and, and they're going, I don't know, you know, but so what does it take? Are they going to have to start getting more lake patrols out there and stuff? I don't know. You know, guys that are checking on, people. I mean, are they going to have like a speed cops out there or something? I was watching two guys over down in Newport Harbor one summer. I was sitting over there at that one bar.
You were in a bar. That's great. You're out there. You're just now talking about these accidents, Phil.
I was in the bar. I wasn't in a boat.
Not in a boat.
Still. It's not responsible to be... Now, let me finish.
Well, this I gotta hear.
Hold on for a minute there, Ace. Are you sitting looking at boats drinking?
Yes.
And you admit that?
Well, I gotta admit it. What's wrong?
Excuse me, I'm not finished yet. So you're getting blind, stinking drunk and watching boats, and you're going, hey, look at that, there's a boat.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
And you don't feel irresponsible? Well, I don't know.
But you could be irresponsible about him in a boat he's not in it.
I can't even understand what he's saying. It's like he's speaking some version of monkey.
What?
Margaret, you can talk all you want about how he's talking monkey. You're not making any sense either.
Are you saying I'm speaking ape?
Yeah, a little bit.
How dare you?
Well, look, if you're telling me that I'm irresponsible because I'm sitting looking at boats and I'm drunk, which I wasn't, by the way.
No, not at all.
Well, I wasn't. How is that irresponsible? If I'm in the boat, that's, now we're talking something bad, okay? If I'm hammered out of my mind and I'm in the boat, sure, that's a drag, you know? But if I'm just sitting there looking at him...
I think there's something about a man sitting and guzzling booze while he looks at boats with children on them, going out, God knows what will happen.
It's not his fault!
No, it's not his fault, but it just...
It just, okay, but I'm going to tell you this. Anybody that gets in a boat, I was sitting there, I was looking at these two guys on jet skis, and they're in the harbor there, and the harbor has got a speed limit, you know, every harbor does. Newport Beach Harbor is no different. And these two clowns were doing at least, I don't know, they looked like they were tearing ass at about 30 or 40 miles an hour. Right through the channel there. And they've got a harbor patrol there, and those guys pull your ass over. Not only did they stop them, they tied the jet skis off, and they put these guys up into their boat in handcuffs.
Why handcuffs?
They were arresting them. They were arresting them. And it was interesting, and I think they should have, too, because with these, they might have been drinking, for all I know. But there were kids that were swimming off of a dock, and they were diving and swimming, and so there were, like, you know, kids present.
What about you? What happened to you?
I didn't get arrested because I wasn't in the boat, and if you think you're going to arrest people that are drinking just looking at it, it isn't going to happen.
I think there needs to be steps in that. I don't like it. I don't like you sitting and staring at me or my boyfriend getting arrested or my husband.
Yeah, you probably, you and Lil Wayne.
I'm going to kick.
Hey, watch it, watch it, watch it. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. You did say Lil Wayne.
I didn't say going boating with him. I said he drools on me.
Phil Henry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Well, we are here at the El Pacifico, and a very pleasant good evening to you. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, hour number two, as they like to say in many of the professional offerings.
Why do they say hour number two? Is it to let everyone know it won't be long now, the show will be over, and you'll be out of your misery?
Yeah, pretty much, for most shows, yeah. No, I'm just saying it because that's what I hear guys say, and I like to copy what people do, because I are a professional, and me want to sound like one.
Sound like an idiot.
Right. All right. So, anyway, welcome to the show, and lots of stuff to talk about. The first thing, we do have this story about Bill Cowher wrecking his Mercedes, which, I don't know, maybe, was he drunk? Unless he was drunk, it's not a story.
Well, that's a fine how do you do. Why would you say something like that?
Because unless he was drunk, it's not a story. Unless, of course, it was somebody else's fault. But there's also a story here about Pablo Sandoval being activated from the disabled list after missing 2 weeks. It's a baseball story. It's a Giant story, and it's not really a baseball story because as I was talking about this story, and it is baseball season, and there are realities that exist in American culture with regard to baseball that remind us of, well, loyalty to teams and how that loyalty can quickly escalate into mindless violence, like what happened to that poor man last season, the Giant fan who was beaten badly by the Dodger fan, who, as far as I know, has not yet been identified. I know they had some guys in jail, and then they got out, and I don't know what's going on with that. But here's the thing. As much as I abhor that kind of violence and that violent act toward that poor man, and a terrific citizen he was. The man was an emergency medical tech. Well thought of by family and by friends. It's just a terrible thing. When I see that Giant hat, something happens to me that is something that happens to any Dodger fan.
Well, are you talking about violence?
No, 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 no. Nothing toward another fan, no. I feel bad about that guy. See, I'm looking at that Giant. I don't like that guy. Now, I'm a Dodger fan, a longtime Dodger fan, and it happens. This is something that I didn't create.
Well, now, wait just a minute. You feel, you're not going to blame the Giant. Are you blaming the Giant?
What Giant?
Not the Giant, but are you blaming?
Well, hold on for a minute, Margaret. The Dodger-Giant feud goes all the way back to New York. I'm saying to you that I inherited a part of that as a Dodger fan. It became my own fight because of a couple of things. First of all, when I was first coming up as a baseball fan, you know, the talk around me was the Giants suck, the Giants suck. You're a Dodger fan? Yeah, the Giants. We hate the Giants. Okay, great. So I started getting that, and I started feeling that. If I'm a Dodger fan, I'm going to hate anybody they're playing, but there's the Giants. Now, the other thing that fed it, which is a very little, it's a piece of L.A. television history that people may be interested in. because, first of all, the Giants and Dodgers, when they were in New York, was no big thing to televise the games because they were across the street from each other, essentially.
Well, where did the Giants play?
In San Francisco.
No, when they were in New York.
They played at the Polo Grounds, which was up, I don't know, North Manhattan somewhere.
And the Dodgers were what?
They played in Brooklyn. Everybody knows that.
I'm going to kick your...
Hey, watch it.
Tell me that.
Watch it.
I don't like the things it says. So the Dodgers played where?
Brooklyn.
So they... All right, so they were very close.
Yes. And what happened when the two teams moved to the West Coast, even though they were on the West Coast now, relatively close, they were now 300 miles from each other. Now, the early televising of Dodger games was only Giant games because Channel 11 here in L.A. that did the Dodger games could only really feasibly televise the San Francisco game. That was the only road game. And they didn't televise any home games because they were blacked out. So the only team you saw were the Giants.
Why?
Because it was easy for them to get their remote truck up to San Francisco. They could televise the game back to L.A. It was no big thing. But getting a whole remote apparatus... it was before you had networks and pool coverage and stuff like that for sports. So trying to get the Dodgers on the road in Chicago or St. Louis or wherever, it was you couldn't do it. It wasn't practical. But the San Francisco game, they could. So every time the Dodgers were on the road against the Giants, we saw it on TV in L.A. And that's another reason why we came to hate the Giants. Because, aha, it's the Giants. They're on TV. There they are. It's the Dodgers and the Giants. The Dodgers. And that became one more reason. Now, the guys today, the Dodger fans today, those cats didn't come up when I did, so they don't know from that stuff, but they hear from guys like me and the older guys and older fans the culture, and they hear the stories, and it becomes a part of their lore. And that's how that's... And I'm not just talking about Dodger fans. I'm talking about any team that has a rivalry with any other team. I don't know, you know, what that may be.
What about the Marlins? What's their rivalry?
The who?
The Marlins. Who's their rivalry?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't. Who's ever in the National League East? I mean, the Cardinals. You know.
The Cardinals. That doesn't make any sense. The Florida Marlins.
I don't. Whoever their natural rivals, whoever's in their division is going to be their rivals. The Mets. Probably the Mets. The Miami teams are always. New York and Miami teams always hate each other. You know, like the Dolphins and Jets and the Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills, man, they hate each other's guts. So that's probably what's going on with Miami.
I don't understand that.
Miami's got a lot of New Yorkers in it.
Why?
Because that's where they go, man. Don't ask me why. Miami's got a lot of New Yorkers, so there's that thing going on there. But the Dodgers, and so, like, for instance, to give an example, when I was a kid, and the Dodgers and Giants hated each other's guts already, and there was a big fight. I mean, it was a horrible fight between the Giants and Dodgers that involved some guy with a baseball bat beating on one of the Dodgers, knocked his head in with this baseball bat. That became bad blood, man. So that Juan Marichal, that was the guy who was in that fight.
I don't know. Who's Juan Marichal?
He's a Mexican guy that played for the Giants. Don't you read too good?
What do you mean Mexican? The guy was from Dominican Republic.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anyway, I won't belabor the point, but that's how that stuff starts. So here we are with the story about Pablo Sandoval, activated from the DL after missing 2 weeks. The Giants have struggled to win games during Sandoval's absence, and the first thing I see is that Giant hat, and I'm thinking, oh, the dirty, stinking Giants.
Well, it becomes a bit of an archetype, I think, what you're saying. It also becomes almost Pavlovian and iconic. Bud, do you know that word, iconic?
No.
Robert?
Not really.
Iconic.
Okay, Margaret, don't yell in my ear.
That's what it is.
Okay.
Now, I'm not done yet. Now, you can see that the Giant colors, and I was going to bring this up, the Giant colors are black and orange, are they not?
Yeah.
What does that remind you of? Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Halloween.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Halloween.
Okay, Margaret. God, what are you, just writing a song?
Well, at least I know how to speak properly. I'm not going to... Phil, the Porky Pig's getting old, you know?
It really is, Mr. Henry.
What does that mean, the Porky Pig?
Everything with you is... Halloween. The reason why I'm saying that is this. When a Dodger fan sees the black and the what is that? That's sort of a
kind of like a pea orange.
Pea orange. It's black and orange.
When a Dodger fan sees that, he thinks of Halloween. He thinks of hell. He thinks of the devil. He thinks of death. And he thinks of the reanimated dead. What's number one on TV right now?
Zombies.
Zombies, thank you. So when he sees the San Francisco Giant, he's thinking of a ghoul, a thing that presumes to come into his city, play a living man in a game of baseball, even though he's a thing, a soulless thing. Where does he get off? See?
I'm not thinking that.
Well, that's because...
Mr. Henry's not thinking it.
I'm not thinking that.
You don't think it consciously.
So in my subconscious, I'm thinking of a dead thing that's come into my town to play my team.
Yes. My God, if you laugh at me...
Margaret, it's the most absurd thing I've ever heard.
Get Frank on the phone, please.
And how many times have I told you...
Get Frank on the phone, please.
Did I?
Yeah, get him on the phone. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Bill Cowher's Mercedes still has to be figured out, but I guess we're going to talk about The Walking Dead from San Francisco. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth Halloween. Is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
You've got to remember that, Phil, because... Would you ask him to stop doing that?
Hold on. Just playing the guitar.
You're not playing the guitar. You're.
What are you doing
that? I'm playing it like that country song. Gimme land, lots of land, lend the story sky. The sky above, don't fence it in.
Don't fence me in.
Yeah, I'm playing like steel guitar.
You're not playing anything, bud.
Yeah, I am. Well, in my mind, I am.
You do like a new Hawaiian music?
Yeah.
All right, stop it, will you? You're driving me nuts.
Wait a minute. There's feedback.
I think that's obnoxious.
There's feedback, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, I better figure out your cable, man.
One time I was listening to this band, a guy goes, yeah, okay, here's a song, and you could hear the band like they were tuning up and going, ding, 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 ding. Hey, man, you want to shut up?
I've heard that before. All right, so...
Well, that was fascinating. So you heard a band tune up once. Woo!
Well, it was kind of...
It's funny, the guys are all going... Deer, 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 deer.
Yeah, and... You know, you guys forget that I sang backup for Blue Oyster Cult. And the other band, I forget.
How do you forget a band that you sung backup with? How do you forget?
I don't remember.
Were you... Well, I better not ask.
No, I was not using drugs. I sang backup for Blue Oyster Cult, and I sang backup for the things. I don't know.
The things?
No, it wasn't the things. It was the blue bonnet.
Blue bonnet was like butter.
What do you mean butter?
Blue bonnet's butter.
Well, it was the blue bonnet. I thought it was the blue bonnets. No, oh, I know. It was the James Gang.
You thought it was the Blue Bonnets. No, wait a minute. It was the James Gang.
Yes, thank you very much. I did some studio singing for them, and I did some studio singing for the frugal ones, the fruit flies.
There's no band called the Frugal Ones.
Phil, are you all of a sudden Jan Wiener? I don't think so.
Jan Wiener, not Jan Wiener.
I think I know who I was the one that lived the life, not you.
Well, what...
It was the funky...
I don't... That was a band that did funk. Parliament Funkadelic.
No, it wasn't Parliament Funkadelic. I'll remember.
The Fruit Flies.
It was the flute player.
Jethro Tull.
No. God, no. God, please, God. I thank God Almighty I was never had anything to do with that band.
And what was wrong with Jethro Tull?
Well, let's start with the flute playing. Let's just start there and end there. No rock band should have a flute player. Sorry.
I can't say as I disagree with that, you know.
What are you talking about? You used to be a Jethro Tull freak.
I used to be is the key phrase. Those guys really got... Jethro Tull, you know, that was a good band at one time, man, but they just, I don't know, they played too long, I guess. You know, they just, they suck. They suck now. I saw them maybe five or six, no, I saw them longer than that. I saw them maybe 8 years ago. God, they stunk, man. You know, I don't know. Anyway, that's not fair of me to say, but they should be playing bigger hall. Look, if you're going to play that music, then play it the way you used to play it. Turn it up, play in a... They turn the sound down. The band just, it's like they're playing, you know.
Well, the audience is older.
Okay, the audience is old. What does that mean? I can't listen to loud music anymore? I don't know. And then I went to see them, and they were like, it was the weirdest crowd because it was at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza, so there was women in evening dresses. Because, you know, these people have season tickets for whatever's happening over there.
Yes, and so they get dressed up.
Yeah, they get dressed up, and there they are dressed up for Jethro Tull. And then there are people are coming in who are just rock and roll fans who are wearing their T-shirts. And it was very weird, very bizarre thing. All right. So I'm glad we figured that out, bud, you and your Hawaiian guitar.
Would you ask him to stop, or I'm going to reach over?
All right, take it easy, bud. And don't, no feedback, okay?
Yeah, my amp's broken.
Well, I've got a new amp.
Hear that, Phil?
Yes, I heard it.
Amp's broken. I need new cabling, roadie. Where's the roadie?
Right here, sir.
We'll do
Why don't you do an iron swine before I put both of these fingers through your skull? I'm going to put them into your eyeball.
Hey, watch it. Watch it, will ya?
I'll stick.
Yeah, I'll bet you'll stick.
Oh, it's like that, huh?
Do an iron swine, okay, before she actually does gouge your eyes out. Robin Thicke may be getting slammed by critics for his latest single, but the duet's judge is obviously doing something right as Blurred Lines is topping charts everywhere. If you love the song or you just love Robin Thicke, you're in luck as Thicke recently revealed what we can expect from his new album. No one cares, Robin. Well, yes, your fans do. But here's the thing. That album and his music in general has been so dumped on, has been so slagged, has been so insulted, that it's fantastic, actually, to see a guy. I think it's cool when critics rip music to shreds and it has absolutely no effect.
You like that, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Do you know the work that we put into, the effort that we put into the reviews that we give?
You know, I don't know what to tell you, Margaret, other than the fact that I'm happy to see when people are enough of an independent mind to go ahead and go out and buy the album anyway and decide for themselves and not have to listen to necessarily these reviews. Doug Danger is joining us also from the Orange County Courier. Do we also have your husband, Frank?
Yes, I want Frank on the line because he's the one that was going to comment on the Ghoul.
On the Giants is the Walking Undead. Doug.
Yeah, Doug Danger here.
Doug, by the way, you sound a little depressed.
Well, I mean, what do you want me to say? I mean, I'm on your program. I'm a gay man. Or what am I, LBGT man? LBB?
You don't have to do that. I think we decided you don't have to do that.
Oh, you did, huh? Because I was told, last I heard, I got to call myself an LBBD or LVD or something.
LGBT. I thought you knew how to say it.
I do know how to say it, but I tell you, so I can call myself gay.
Yes, yes, yes. We're not going to do that.
Well, as a gay man and as a gay journalist, I can tell you the Robin Thicke album it's a war crime. I think it's criminal in its execution, criminal in its intent, and I think it is criminal in what it's going to make me do if I hear my niece put it on. Because my niece, who's a young 16-year-old girl, she is I love that girl, and I love my nephew. And when my brother and his wife were out of town, you know, those kids are staying with me.
I know.
If I see my niece put on that Robin Thicke album that is a, as I mentioned, it's a criminal act. That whoever recorded it,
Well, Robin Thicke recorded it.
But who helped him? I want the names of everybody involved in that album because I think they all should be put into a jail cell. That's how bad that record is. And my niece probably loves it to death.
Well, the guy is, he's number one on the charts, man. So, as Margaret and I were just saying, and I know you gave it a really savage review, didn't you?
I did. I called it a criminal act. I said that Robin Thicke is following in the footsteps of his father, a man who elevated mediocrity to a, not just an art form, he elevated mediocrity to the level of old world glass blowing.
I thought that was a very good touch, too, Doug. I liked that a lot.
Thank you very much. But I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. And nobody... So, in other words, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and people still bought the album?
Well, what difference does it make, man? If they like the music, they're going to buy it.
I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
Doug, I don't think people are necessarily going to take your word as sacrosanct just because... in this particular case, because you're gay, because it is a... It's a very catchy album. It's a very catchy song. It's just catchy.
I'll bet it's catchy. I'll bet whatever he's got, they're catching. So whoever they are, and when I say they, I mean the models that work with him in his music videos, you better get them into a clinic because they need shots. One look at him, and I know they need shots. I'm Doug Danger.
Is he still there? Doug, are you there?
Yeah. You still need me?
Yes. Yeah, why'd you throw the phone down?
Because I did the report.
No, Doug, this is not a report. This is a conversation.
Well, what more do you want me to say about this guy? Robin Thicke did an album. He did a collection of songs that if they were not put on an album and sold, would be used to kill rodents. They would be used to murder rodents in your yard. And by next week, if you didn't pick the little tiny carcasses up, your whole yard would stink of dead rodents. That's what that album would be used as a way...
All right, we'll be right back. I think we have Frank Gray coming up on the world-famous Phil Henry Show on the San Francisco Giants black and orange colors, representative of the undead. All right, so...
Go out, take a walk, Phil. You don't look good.
Yeah, yeah. World-famous Phil Henry Show. Thank you.
Here's a report. What more do you want?
No, that's fine.
Phil Henry. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. As I mentioned, Bobby Dooley now with a fan page at Facebook. You can check in with Bobby and like her page if you'd like to. It's facebook.com/BobbyFans. We're going to have Bobby on here in just a moment to talk a little bit about that. Margaret, you have a page, right?
Yeah, I've got a regular friends page. I don't have a fan page. I don't need that kind of trouble right now. If Bobby wants to do that, good for her. I think it does take a certain ego.
Yeah, well, nobody...
Nobody what?
Never mind.
No, he was going to say something. Nobody what?
Nobody's asking your opinion about that.
Well, I'm giving my opinion, big guy.
Yes, ma'am.
God, you guys have gotten rude. And I blame you, Phil. The three of you are slobs when it comes to treating a woman with decency.
I apologize, Margaret, for Robert's comment there, okay? I don't think we're slobs all the time.
Well, I do.
I apologize for... Robert, you didn't need to say that.
Honestly.
In any event, yes, I've got a friends page. I don't need to have smoke piped up my butt like she does.
Well...
There he goes again.
Robert, just ease back with the opinions, all right?
I don't know. I agree with Robert. You're...
Oh, would you spit it out there, okay? You sound like that guy Gigo, that Jackie Gleason deaf mute. Why don't you beat your fist with...
Beat my what? She's going to say something else.
No, I wasn't. I was going to say beat your fist against your mouth. It might loosen something up.
Oh, man.
You love that, don't you?
Well...
All right, let me go over here to... I think Frank Gray is on the line with us. No, Bobby, when are we getting Frank? Is Bobby there? Bobby, how are you doing? It's Phil Henry.
Oh, hi, Phil. It's Bobby and Steve. How are you?
Good.
Well, hold on for a minute. Where is Frank?
Excuse me. I'm going to do my report, and then I think you can do whatever you want to do. I don't care what it is, but...
Fine.
All right, Bobby, then we'll get Frank on.
Yeah. Let me talk to my husband, please, on line 6.
Line 6 is being taken up by... Bobby Dooley.
I'm on line 6. Thank you very much.
Well, then put it on line five.
And Steve's on line five.
I hope you both die from venereal disease.
That was not necessary.
Steve, turn the TV down, please.
I just want to see the hockey game.
The hockey game is over. Would you please tell Steve that the hockey game's over, Phil?
Steve, the Blackhawks won.
The what?
The Blackhawks won.
What did?
The Blackhawks won. The Blackhawks.
The Indian or?
The hockey team. The hockey team, honey. Phil, we wanted to come on and tell you about the Bobby Dilley fan page. It's on Facebook.com/BobbyDilleyFans. And if you want to make comments, you can. There was a lady there today, and I want to get her name right, L.D. Martin. L.D., honey, this is Bobby. I don't know if you're listening, but you remember I commented to her, Phil, early today when she got a little snippy with me. She got a little smart mouth. And if people try to get smart mouth with me, I pretty much shovel it right back on top of them and then let them towel off later.
Well, what did the lady say?
Well, she gave me some trouble, and I said, tell you what, instead of giving me a hard time, why don't you figure out how to put a profile pic up? Because it was one of those profiles where you just see the white, the head, there's nothing there.
Yeah, a lot of times people just have the white, the ghost head.
The ghost head. Oh, with no profile pic.
Yeah. So she gave me a ration of you-know-what, so I gave it back to her. And I was just entering now into the little comment box. Phil Hendry is reading our comments back and forth, so I hope you feel good about what you started.
Well, I didn't read them on the air.
Well, you read them on your video cast.
Right.
I'd like to go back, if I could. Hold on. Phil is reading our comments on the air right now. It all started, Phil, when I posted the following thing. Would you turn that down, Steve? It's driving me out of my mind.
Sorry, honey. Are you on your period?
Yes, I'm on my period.
Okay, we don't need to hear that.
Bobby on the case. This is a little post that I like to put up. And it says, in New Mexico, urinating in public carries a $100 fine. I don't know if you, did you know that, Phil?
No, I did not know that, no.
Okay, so you know it now.
Yes, ma'am, I know it now.
Fine, Bobby.
I don't want to hear her.
Margaret.
So, in New Mexico, urinating in public carries a $100 fine. And I wrote, in anticipation of the smart mouth people that'll say I learned that by urinating in New Mexico, no, I didn't. I did, but it was in an airport stall, not out in public, like on the runway, because I was at the New Mexico International I was at the New Mexico airport.
Well, where, what city?
It was in the city that has the big long name that starts with Q, Albuquerque.
Starts with Q, Albuquerque starts with an A.
Well,
Albuquerque has got a big long name, so A.
Well, there's a Q in it, though.
Yeah, there is a Q in it, you're right.
Well, so what starts with an A?
I know that, but there's a Q in it. So we were in Kirky, whatever that's what we call it. That's why we think it starts with a Q.
You call it Kirky? It's Albuquerque.
I know, but we call it Kirky for short, don't we, Steve?
Yeah, we've got all of that. We're going to be going back to Kirky for a vacation. Kids won't go to Kirky.
Yeah, we're going back to Kirky in August.
Okay, so you're going back to Kirky. How do you think the people of Albuquerque feel, Bobby? Okay.
Well, I don't want to do a song and a dance. We call it Kirky. Now, so I said...
You know, hold on for just a second, Ms. Dooley. Yes, you can call it Kirky. You don't have to yell at us.
I didn't yell at us. I yelled at you.
Well, I want to call it...
What's that?
Nothing. I just came off the microphone and went into your studio briefly.
Right. Was that you, Robert?
Yeah, I was doing a Steve Dooley impression. Hey, I think we ought to call it Kirky. What do you think?
That's pretty good.
That's really good.
Okay.
I'd swear to God you're my husband if it wasn't for, well, the darkness.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Phil, I wrote that I don't urinate in public in New Mexico. I urinated in a bathroom stall. L.D. Martin wrote, does that include wetting your pants, too? If so, I'll have to remember to be careful. Thanks, B. So then I wrote, if you read the instructions, they tell you how to put a picture on your Facebook profile. And also, Phil, someone liked it. See?
Yeah, but I also see that somebody liked
L.D. Martin when she said, do you wet your pants?
So? I'm talking about me right now.
Well, somebody equally liked her.
Good night.
Wow.
And you think I'm bad.
Wow.
Man, see that one ripping hung up on you.
Do you think? Ms. Dooley, you owe me an apology for that. A big, loud belch, and then she hangs up. Why? Because I pointed out that L.D. Martin got a thumb-up like.
You know, the whole thumb-up, thumb-down, two big thumbs going all around her, I don't know how it goes.
That's dirty. You're not supposed to say that.
I'm sorry. I meant to say thumb-up, thumb-down.
No, there's no thumb-down on Facebook. There's a thumb-up. The lady wrote, here, I'll read it. Does that include wetting your pants? Bobby wrote back, if you read the instructions. Then she wrote back, I know I'm bad. Please forgive a nervous little lady who is still new at this. Or just imagine that maybe I have blue skin and a featureless face, but you'll have to admit I don't have a hair out of place. She got two like thumbs for that. Bobby wrote, that's nice. You don't need to write me a book. Just acknowledge that I give you good advice. So she butchered up the language there. She got a thumb up. Then L.D. Martin wrote, I will when you do, and that's when she wrote, Phil Hendry is reading our comments in the air right now.
Boy, I'd say that L.D. Martin came out on top in that one.
Right, and I know that Bobby is probably frantically dialing us back right now, and I think it would be funny if... don't put her back! Yes?
Yeah, I want to make a comment. I heard what you said about L.D. Martin saying, I will when you do, and then you said that I wrote, Phil Hendry's reading our comments in the air. I wanted to correct that, but I...
My wife wanted to correct you, but you didn't give her a chance.
Yes, I did.
No, you had to go back on the ring.
If you don't turn that down, Steve, I'll...
Ow!
You know, this is the only radio show that I know of that has violent episodes.
Well, I didn't do anything, Phil.
No, but, you know, you're always going after him. They just got into a fist fight. I remember early on when Frank slugged you on the air?
Yes, and you broke your chair.
Yeah, I broke my chair because I was stunned. No, you slugged Frank. That was it. You slugged Frank. Frank Gray is going to be with us here in a moment to talk about the ghoulish colors of the San Francisco Giants, as well as we'll get into the story about him, you slapping him on the air. Thank you very much, Bobby, but I can't take it any longer. But do visit Bobby's Facebook fan page. That's facebook.com/Bobby. Bobby fans. All right, Bill Cowher never saw the hit coming. The analyst and former Super Bowl winning coach was driving on Park Avenue in New York City on Sunday when a woman driving a Ford Fusion suddenly appeared in front of him. We'll tell you what happened, but it ain't good for Bill's Mercedes when we come back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
Are we on the air?
Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, we're not even on the air anymore.
No, I didn't know it.
Yes, you did.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And this is the time of night where I have to avoid that television up there to my right because the ASPCA ads come on.
Well, Phil, it's about time they show those ads, and people should stare directly at those abused animals so that they will become members of the ASPCA and help them. Help them, Phil.
I became a member already, okay? I'm a member of the ASPCA.
You did.
Yeah, and I even get $500, which, by the way, ASPCA, it said if I joined for $500, I became a founder. Okay?
Yeah.
I didn't see anything about that.
You blew it. You've got to check the little founder box.
Yeah, you gave him $500 for no reason.
Shut up.
Hey. What do you mean for no reason?
You know, tell him, man, if you give him $500, you got to say, hey, I want to be a member of the founder or whatever, and then they'll let you do it.
So I gave him $500 and I'm not a founder.
Yeah, how about that? Next time, read the instructions, okay? Read the instructions and become a full-fledged member of the APC, whatever it's called.
ASPCA. Are you members?
Oh, I love the plural. What's that mean?
Are you and Frank members?
Yes, we are. Frank is, I'm not yet, but he represents me.
So Frank is, you're not yet.
Yes, that's right, Phil. Is Frank there?
Frank Gray, there he is. Sounds like he's watching the same show that Bobby Dooley was watching. Frank, how you doing?
Hey, young man, how are you?
I'm great.
I'm better than Custer. Margaret.
Yes, dear.
I heard what you said. I joined the PCA, the American Prevention of the Cruelty to Animal.
ASPCA.
Yeah, there you go. And the AS, I joined it, and I said on the little form, it said, are you a Mr. or a Mrs.? And I wrote that I'm a Mr., and I've got a wife. So I told them that you are part of the package, you know, and I said that my wife, does he donate the money? And they hung up on me, but
What do you mean they hung up on you?
Because I don't think the feeble brains that run the PCA.
ASPCA.
I understand that, Phil, but I'm using the shorthand. It's the prevention of cruelty
to animals.
To animals, yeah. Now, I said to the ABCBA, God, the ASPCA, I said, does he have to join? And they said, who? And I said, my wife. And they went, ha, 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 what have you been smoking? And I said, well, I'll tell you right now, I'll go through the phone on you, so don't even go there.
Frank, dear, you know that people have a difficult time understanding you because of the gender confusion.
You say gender confusion one more time. I told him I'll beat the girdle right off his ass.
Well, Frank, you know you have a problem with that, don't you?
No, I do not.
He doesn't acknowledge it at all.
Look, you're listening to him telling me that I don't acknowledge. Don't you think I'd acknowledge something like gender confusion if I knew I had it? But he keeps saying I've got it. I see no evidence of it at all. I even listened to my own son. She was telling me about it, too.
Okay. I mean, if you don't feel you have it.
I don't feel I have it. I feel in the pink. I've never felt better in my life. And, Margaret, I got to tell you, you know, every time he opens his mouth about this gender confusion, it further confuses our son. My son. She's going to be playing football this year. You understand that?
I know. You were telling me.
Yeah. I'm very, very proud of her. And you know what position she's playing?
No.
Tight end. And I say tight end because Jason J. Delmonico is a big kid. I mean, she's big for her age. You know, she's 14, but she's about... How tall is Jason J. Delmonico?
I think he's about 6'1 now.
Wow, that's a good size. And tight ends have to block.
No. I know. Tight ends are blockers, and she's got the move. She's got great flexibility, great hands. Can lay that block down on the run. That's what I want to see her do. I want to see her pull out, and I want to see her lay someone out. Because you think of the great tight ends in pro football. Who do you think is the best?
What happened here?
Never mind.
Who do you think, Phil, right now is the best tight end?
Well, I mean, the legend, Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, right there. She's great. And the other one that I like, the guy, I'll tell you, the legendary Jackie Smith. Was she good or what? And
Jackie Smith was a great one. You know, you talk about the great Todd Christensen.
Todd, yes, she was another good one.
I mean, there have been some good tight ends. So there's no question it's a great position for him.
Yeah, I think she's going to do really great there. But if Margaret has his way... my son, she'll be just sitting there doing nothing.
No, I just don't want him to get hurt, that's all, Frank. Now, darling, I want to ask you about the San Francisco Giants and the theory that you and I were talking about. I think it's fascinating.
Well, all right, Phil, my theory is simply this. The Giants, you were referencing the long-standing feud that the Giants have with the Dodgers. Now, Mom's Mabley, or which one was the pitcher?
Juan Marichal.
Well, yeah, when Juan Marichal took that bat to Johnny Roseboro's head, she was making a statement for the entire San Francisco Giant organization. She was saying that she wanted to clobber Johnny Roseboro because she wasn't as good as she was. You see what I mean?
Not quite.
Yes, I mean, Juan Marichal was saying that her organization, the San Francisco Giants, was better than Johnny Roseboro's organization because Johnny Roseboro, who's she? She's no one compared to her, Juan Marichal.
Did Juan Marichal really take a bat to Johnny Roseboro?
Well, not a baseball bat.
Yeah, he did. He hit Johnny Roseboro with a bat, and a big brawl broke out.
And and Sandy Koufax, you know, she came in and tried to break it up. Well, Sandy Koufax, she couldn't break up a water fight between two Girl Scouts, you know. She's just, she's a pitcher, or she was a pitcher, she's not anymore, but...
Johnny, I saw Sandy Koufax at the spring training.
All right, well, let's not go down memory lane. All I'm trying to say is the San Francisco Giants wear black and orange. Now, that is the color of the ghoul. That's the internationally recognized color of the ghoul. And because we are now entering the year of the ghoul, 2014, I don't know if you know that or not.
What?
Get a load of him. You haven't heard.
You haven't heard the year of the ghoul? What do you mean the year of the ghoul?
The Chinese New Year, Ace. You never heard of that?
I've never heard of the ghoul.
Well, I can tell you, if you talk to some of the Chinese that I know, they say this is the year of the ghoul. I talked to the guy. I'll tell you who I talked to, Margaret. I talked to the guy that runs the apothecary, and she was loading some herbs into a capsule one day because her wife needed them. And she says to me that her wife is sick. And I said, what's wrong with him? And she said, well, he's got his period. And I said, well, so does my wife, and he doesn't take herbs. And she said, well, he does. And so he's on his period, and while I'm talking to her, in he comes, and he's all emotional, because you know how women are, and he's yelling and screaming. And she asked him, what are you screaming about? And he said something about the ghoul. And I said, ain't that like a woman? And she said, you bet. And he went off and had a man and went out and got some maxi pads. And
well, what has that got to do with the year of the ghoul?
The year of the ghoul is what she was talking about.
Who?
The husband.
What do you mean the year of the ghoul, man? What? That's not on any Chinese calendar that I've ever seen.
Oh, well, get a load of her. So you're around all these Chinese calendars, huh? So what do you got, a collection?
Yeah, I'll bet Phil has a real collection of Chinese calendars. Where do you get off, Phil?
Yeah, where does she get off, anyway?
Get out of here! She!
You hung up on my dear husband, Frank.
Yes, I did. If I didn't hang up on him, he was bound to hang up on himself. He was having his period.
Well, it's the gender confusion.
Yeah. I am not buying Year of the Ghoul.
I have to look up Year of the Ghoul, see if it's in 2014 or not. Might be another year.
Yeah, might be like 2015.
Oh, well, that's, you know. All right. Coming back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, we still have Bill Cowher's Mercedes-Benz that got into this dinger there in New York City. We'll read up on that. And other news as it becomes apparent to us. We've got a tropical storm off the coast of Mexico that may be affecting the weather here in Los Angeles in a negative way in the forthcoming days. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. This is a historic night. This is our last 10-to-1 show, our last 10p to 1a show. Tomorrow night, we start in our new time at 7 p.m. We'll be back to tell you more on our show in just a moment.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Oh, look at that, man. We have, if you're looking on Phil TV and HD, this is a piece of film that I found of the city of Los Angeles at night in the 40s. It's color film, and it's someone who was just shooting the street. And I think it's B-roll, it's stock footage that they used in motion pictures.
Well, you can tell from all of those cars that it's the 40s or something.
How old are those cars?
I just said the 40s.
The 40s, probably, bud. I don't know. But there's one coming up here that's pink. You see this pink car? Who's the guy that drove that?
Probably it's the only way you could be gay in those days.
The only way you could be gay?
Yeah, probably the only way to let people know you're gay.
You drove around a pink car.
I don't know, man, but there was a pink car there somewhere. So in any event, let's get over to the El Pacifico there so I don't feel too completely weird. Yesterday on television was quite an event. Was it yesterday or the day before? The thing was yesterday, wasn't it? It was Nick Wallenda, and he was walking across the Grand Canyon on that wire. And I don't know if you heard that he was planning on doing this. I'd seen the ads coming up on Discovery, and it was live on the Discovery Channel in the late afternoon, I'd say late afternoon, but the sun was, because of the summer months, the sun was still very prominent in the sky. And here is this guy I don't know a hell of a lot about. I've heard the Willenda name, you know, Margaret.
Well, the Willenda name is known down through the ages, the flying Willendas. They were known in the circus tents around the world. Around the world. Any circus tent you went into, you were sure to see a Willenda flying through the air and doing the graceful things they did.
Any circus tent?
Just about any circus tent.
Well, I mean...
I mean the Willendas, Phil. The Willendas. Okay?
Yeah, the Willendas. The flying Willendas.
Yes.
Did they fly?
Three guesses. What a jackpot.
No, they didn't fly, but they were trapeze artists.
Oh.
That's what flying Willenda meant. They would fly through the air, and you know the song, he goes through the air with the greatest of ease, the flying young man on the trapeze.
Well, I know there's a lot of, and I don't mean to be crude. I don't even mean crude or anything.
What happened to you?
What happened, bud?
Something got stuck in my throat.
Probably your words.
No, but when you say on a trapeze, I saw a girl do that one time up at San Francisco on Columbus.
We're not talking about that. Trapeze.
In the circus, you circus act. The circus.
Oh.
And so the song goes, he flies through the air with the greatest of ease. I don't know how it goes, but
the flying young man on a big time trapeze.
Big time trapeze. No, he flies through the air with the greatest of ease. The daring young man on the something or other.
The trapeze, the something or other.
But that wasn't about the Willendas.
It might as well have been, because when you talk trapeze and you talk Willenda, the only other name that is going to come up is whoever this girl is that Bud's talking about on a trapeze. You're talking about a strip bar, though, so there is no name.
All right, let's forget about the strip bars. So the Willendas... Now, the great-grandfather died in an accident, and I don't know his name.
Well, I think it was the Willendas were originally from Eastern Europe.
Right.
And it was something like Igor. You can say Igor. I'm sure no one will care.
No, I'd like to get the man's name right, Margaret, if you don't mind. He died in an accident.
It was the great-great-grandfather. It was a long time ago. Igor or Kurt. It's generally Kurt.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I do.
No, you don't know Igor or Kurt.
It was something like that.
The man died in... this is a family that has made the trapeze, the high wire act, famous. And the Flying Willendas, of course, well-known in circuses throughout Europe. The family came to America. There's a branch of the family in America. Maybe they're still in Europe. And one of the branches of that family is in Florida. And it is Nick Willenda, who lives in Sarasota with his family.
You're saying that there's a fairly significant contingency of circus people in Florida.
Well, I think, yeah, going back to the early 20th century, and maybe even before, as circuses traveled throughout the United States, they wintered, many of them wintered in Florida. They would go down there, and they'd park their circus tent and their elephants, or whatever the hell they had, and they got their act together, you know.
Yes, they just relaxed.
Yeah.
Did the animals relax, too? What do you think, man?
Yes, I'm sure the animals relaxed. Did the animals relax?
But they wintered down there. Now, what happened was, in those days, many of the circuses had the little people and the bearded lady. And a lot of those people, just like anyone, are down in Florida. And the little people, the bearded lady, the human skeleton, and they all said, boy, I really like it here in Florida. I'd like to settle down, build a home, a condo. And so today, Florida is crawling with these, well...
You're going to say freak.
I didn't say freak, but Florida's crawling with a certain contingent of them, which makes it not a very attractive place to, well...
Margaret, what are you trying to say?
I think I said it.
Florida's crawling with circus freaks is what you're saying.
I didn't say that.
But that's what you meant.
No, that's not what I meant. What I meant to say was, Florida is... This is a positive review, Phil. This is not a negative review.
That's why it's crawling?
What is?
Florida's crawling with them.
What?
Never mind. Go ahead.
Florida right now is crawling with circus people. That's what I said.
Yeah, it's crawling with them.
So, that's not negative.
Well, now, come on. Florida's crawling with circus people, and that's not negative.
Not necessarily. There's a lot of things that crawl, Phil. Babies crawl. Oh, got you on that one.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't want to be in a town.
No, no, I'm sorry, bud. I got both of you. You can't. There's no comeback.
Hold on for a minute. What, bud?
Are you going to try to tell me that you don't want to be around if it's crawling with babies?
I don't care if it's crawling with babies, no.
I do.
That's hardly the point, bud. All right, so fine, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Are you giving up, or are you just letting the lady have her way?
Margaret, you're going to win no matter what. Florida does have descendants of circus people, and I believe there's even a town. Does anybody know the name of this town in Florida?
Yes, there's one. There's a circus. There's a town in Florida that is packed with circus, with the circus acts.
Yeah, that's when you talk about crawling with a freak.
It's not crawling with freaks. I didn't say that.
Well, there is a town in Florida, I think, that has a number of folks that are descended from the little people, for instance, and other circus employees, circus workers. You have circus. Is Circus World still around?
Man, I don't know. That was a long time. How do you know about Circus World?
How do you know about Circus World? That's a very, very closely guarded secret.
What is?
Circus World. Nobody knows about that.
Are you nuts or something, man? I was down there when Circus World was built. What do you mean a closely guarded secret?
They don't talk about Circus World anymore. Things happened, and I don't want to go any further.
What happened?
Nothing.
What happened, Margaret?
Circus World is best left untalked about.
The freaks ran wild one night.
The freaks ran wild in a driving rainstorm.
Oh, yes. I remember seeing that movie, too.
What movie?
What movie?
Freaks!
Well, wasn't that filmed at Circus World?
No, that was filmed in California. All right.
All right.
It was. Circus World is best left untalked about. So in any event, all of this is to say that the Walendas have extended the family to America. And there was Nick Walenda yesterday. And I got to tell you something. That was one of the most amazing television events I've ever seen. I'll tell you why. Andy Levy tweeted something that I thought was absolutely dead on right. He said, I didn't want to see the man fall. He said, but it would almost be worth it to watch how fast all the jokes got scrubbed off of Twitter if he did, because everybody was making joke after joke. And what happened was this. They interviewed Nick Walenda, 10 minutes, 15 minutes before he eventually went out on the wire. He was dressed in jeans and a T-shirt. That was it. He had that big pole that was kind of strapped to his shoulders, and he just got right up on that wire, and before you knew it, he was beginning his walk, talking to his father, who was his, if you will, his team leader, his coach, and the only guy that he wanted to talk to. He didn't want to talk to any press. He didn't want to talk at one point. Willie Geist was there from the Scarborough show.
Oh, that ass.
Yeah, well, Willie Geist was there. And Walenda had made the decision, I don't want to talk to anybody. They were going to be talking to the Discovery broadcast team. He said, nope. It was just him and his dad, and he was praying. And
This is the part that I find offensive.
Well, hold on, Margaret, because I'm going to finish. As he walked across the wire, he was praying. He was saying, thank you, Jesus, you are my guide, you are my strength, thank you. Please, Jesus, calm down the wind. Please, Jesus, calm this cable down. And the cable at one point was really moving, the wind was really... And as he got out across this thing, he's halfway across, it took him 22 minutes and 50 seconds, I believe, to get across the Grand Canyon, 400 yards, 1,020 feet above the canyon floor.
God, man.
That's 102 stories. And
well, how do you get 1,020?
10 feet per story.
Well.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. The point being that as he got halfway across this cable, you could hear the wind in his microphone. It's absolutely and completely unfathomable to me and probably a great many other people how a man can be halfway across a 400-yard expanse, 1,000 feet in the air, holding this big pole, walking along this cable. and not just lose your mind from fear. But he was doing it. Thank you, Jesus. Obviously.
Yeah, because he is praying to Jesus.
No, I think it's because he's, and I'll get into this. I think there is a certain segment of us that are just flat fearless, but he also has obviously a great deal of experience and doesn't have a basic fear of heights like a lot of us have and like I've got more than my fair share of. So you have this event. He's praying. He's going across. He's every 5 seconds, thank you, Jesus. Jesus, please calm this wind. Jesus, please calm this wind. Now, gosh, you know, Jesus, at one point it got really strong, and he was like, come on, Jesus, you know, please, God, please, Father, you're my strength, you're my guide. And I can well imagine, Margaret, that there were people just like you getting all offended by all the God talk. So,
Well, I don't think it was necessary. He knew what he was doing. He didn't need all that gobbledygook.
Well, let's not be offensive, all right? We'll be right back with more on the Willenda, this marvelous spectacle yesterday. I enjoyed it. And after it was over, I reflected, and I reflected for a long time.
Well, don't start. See, you're reflecting. Does that mean you're praying?
No.
Because you're starting to get into some Jesus stuff.
Yeah, you gotta watch that.
Don't tell me to watch. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Truth you're all, oh, is our reflected. Bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
I was thinking about it.
Well, it sounded like you were saying you were praying.
James McQuarters is with us. He's at Belmar Academy, which will be fielding for the very first time coming up in 2013. Belmar Academy will be fielding a hockey team playing in the California Interscholastic Federation Hockey Division. How many teams, Father?
Right now we've got, I know the Belmar, and two or three teams in the Los Angeles County area. And we'll be playing some teams from the Central Coast and playing some teams from the Fresno area. But right now, we think we've got a Southern Division. We've got 12 teams. I think it's going to be an exciting season, and we're watching the practice right now. The coach has the boys out there.
So you guys are practicing right now at...
Well, not you guys, but I'm out watching the boys, and I bless them. The coach, Torton, told me to come out and bless the teams, name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And as they skate by me, I bless them. And yeah, they're coming by now. Yeah, hold on. Name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And Father, it's tiring. But
okay, well, Father, I don't want to interrupt you.
No. I'm fine.
Father, what did you think of Nick Willenda yesterday and his prayer and the entire event?
Well, Phil, I thought, first of all, the first thing I want to say is praise God and the great Willenda family. It was quite a feat. It was quite a wondrous feat. There's no question about it. But I felt myself was feeling drawn to the spirituality of the event was quite impressive, I think. But I also felt that that people watching on the event on television, they might get the feeling that God is at their disposal for any kind of kooky stunt. Now, I'm not saying that what was done yesterday was a kooky stunt. That far be it from me, far be it from me to say something like that. But I will tell you that they are. Did you? The puck just came over the glass here.
Do they have their own arena there?
Who?
Your hockey team.
No. We're at the Culver Skate. We're in Culver City at the Culver Skate.
Oh, in Culver City at the ice rink.
That's right. But, Phil, the thing that worried me the most about the Willendas yesterday, as I watched the young man, Nick Willenda, going across his high wire, as he was talking to Jesus, asking for Jesus' help, and asking for the help of the Father in heaven, to calm the winds down, to calm down the cable, and so forth. The thought occurred to me that there are people that are watching this, probably younger people, perhaps individuals who want to get a taste for themselves. I don't know if you remember the song by Frosty, he said, "When will I get mine?" And I think there's a lot of people out there that are waiting to get theirs.
Well, what do you mean, get theirs?
I'm saying that if they see God going to extraordinary lengths to help this Willenda chap as he goes across the Grand Canyon, they don't think that God is at their disposal for any kind of boneheaded stunt, any kind of real kooky thing, you know.
Well, I mean, when you say boneheaded stunt...
I don't know what it would be, Phil. I mean, you have to understand, I'm not a circus fan, and I've never really been one for the high wire this or the high wire that.
I certainly understand what Bud was talking about when he said the trapeze there and some of these nightclubs in San Francisco. I've not been to these clubs. When I was in the seminary, we visited a few of them. So I'm all familiar with the trapeze act. Don't worry about it. But
well, I'm not worried about that. I'm saying that this man exhibited a profound faith.
Well, yes, he exhibited a profound faith. But what I'm telling you and what I'm telling your audience is that the people see what happened yesterday as an entree for them to go out on some boneheaded stunt, some real kooky idea. I don't know what it would be. The man wants to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel. What if you get one of these Evel Knievels? And I remember Evel Knievel. He was the motorcycle chap, is that right?
Yeah.
All right. What if you get another one of these guys who wants to jump over these buses? And I want to go over there like a 30 buses or 40 buses or whatever, Evel Knievel. And thank you, Jesus. Praise Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. All the way through as he's riding his motorcycle and goes up the ramp. And thank you, Jesus. Praise Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. And he goes directly down into the gas tank of one of them. Yeah.
That'd be ugly, Father.
You better believe it'd be ugly. And he's going, thank you, Jesus. Praise Jesus. And he's on fire as he's rolling around trying to put himself out.
Oh, well, come on. I doubt seriously if that's... Are you blame... So what would you think?
Well, I would think of it, not a very wise thing for people to be praying to Jesus. You're putting an awful lot of pressure on God. And if you make a human error, you make a human mistake, God can only help those that help themselves. You see what I mean? God can help those that help themselves. I think that Nick Willand yesterday, as he crossed the Grand Canyon, and he made such a spectacular and marvelous crossing of the Grand Canyon there, across on that big wire they had, the cable, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he did a wonderful job there praying to Jesus, thank you, Jesus. But if for whatever reason, God forbid, and thank God Almighty this didn't happen, the trauma to his children would have been terrible. The trauma to the children of America would have been terrible. But I said to Father Staley, because he'd lost a buddy in the army the same way, and I didn't want to say, well, what if he falls? So I had to do the sound effect. And Father Staley said, please. And I said, all right, what if... I did that. And it scared him.
Good Lord.
That's right. It scared him. So I said, I'm sorry, Father. So I tried to do it a different way. I went, whoa! And I did it so that he fell, and then you hear him hit the canyon floor and go, oof. And Father Staley, that was not so traumatic. So I said, Father Staley, what if... And he said, he laughed and said, well, what are you going to do? So that's when I knew I said something wasn't quite so traumatic. So I said, well, Father Staley, looking here at this Willenda. Now, what if he gets halfway across and... Oof! And Staley, he doubled over, almost peed himself. And I said, you think that's funny? He says, no, but the way you say oof is.
Now, okay, so what's the point of this?
What's the point? The point, my boy. The point is, if that man were to have fallen, the trauma that would be visited upon the people of America, the people of the earth... Out of the people of Earth, the trauma would have been too much to bear.
Well, no kidding. No kidding. But that was part of the drama of watching this. Because I was saying to Dan, I'm watching this, and we have a tendency to think that something's on television, it's controlled, and there's an inevitability to the outcome, as if he's going to be safe and everything's going to be safe. And we don't realize that we're watching a real event here. He could fall.
Well, that's the thing I wanted to say to you. I don't think so. I don't think there is any way he was going to fall.
Because of his faith in God?
No, because of his faith in the Discovery Channel. I'm kidding. Yes, because of his faith in God.
Well, what are you telling me? There's a conspiracy now?
Never mind.
All right, we'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, probably conspiracy.
Yeah.
Phil Henry. Famous Phil Henry Show.
What, Margaret?
What are you chewing for?
I make Turkish coffee, and there are grounds in the coffee. I've told you this a million times. There's grounds in the coffee, okay?
Yeah, you're supposed to have grounds in no coffee.
Well, I got grounds in these coffees, okay?
Well, it's weird. No one does that.
I do it. I drink a cup of coffee that has coffee grounds in it. Now, what happens is the coffee grounds drop to the bottom of the cup, and there's coffee at the top of the cup, and that's the coffee that I drink. I like that coffee.
All right, Phil, you don't have to...
Well, you guys are asking me all the time about it, and I keep telling you.
Yeah, Mr. Henry's already told you about him.
Yeah, what are you all of a sudden, his press spokesman?
Hey, bud, I told you guys that I make Turkish coffee. It has the grounds in it, and that's how you drink it, and that's the way it's going to be. And if I, you know, get grounds in my mouth or something, I'm not spitting them out, I'll tell you that. I'm swallowing them.
Oh, my God. Nobody in the Western world does that.
Yeah, what are you, are you on a camel or something? I mean, what's the deal, you know?
What do you care? Am I on a camel? So anyway, welcome back to the program. First of all, a couple of things. Now, what was the thing we were talking about? Oh, I forget now. Well, we were talking about the Willendas, but I think we've pretty much covered that. The Celtics and the Clippers have made a trade. The teams tried for days to orchestrate a swap to send Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce to Los Angeles. Rumors said the teams discussed the trade more than a week ago, but Pierce was dropped from the equation, then Garnett, in order to put through a deal sending coach Doc Rivers to the Clippers. The NBA forbids coaches from being traded, and Commissioner David Stern said he would veto a Celtics-Clippers trade that appeared to circumvent the collective bargaining agreement, a two-part trade sending Garnett to the Clippers for center DeAndre Jordan and giving the Clippers draft picks. That was a violation, so the Celtics and the Clippers took the players out of the equation, finishing a swap, sending a first-round draft pick to the Celtics for Rivers' release. Anyway, that's the latest in basketball news. I have no idea whether that's legal or not, and quite frankly, whether it'll stand up. I got to tell you something, man. The Clippers now are the team here in L.A., and I don't mean to talk so much about L.A. sports, but I'm never, ever, and that's the great thing about being me, because I just am not convinced by that stuff. I'm never going to be a Clipper fan, just like I'm not really an Angel fan. That's just the way it is. All right, here's the Bill Cowher story. The analyst and former Super Bowl-winning coach was driving on Park Avenue in New York City on Sunday when a woman driving a Ford Fusion suddenly appeared in front of him, cutting off his Mercedes. Cowher hit the woman's car before careening into some scaffolding. The 56-year-old Cowher laid a pretty good hit himself, something he would have been proud of had it been one of his defenders with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He cracked a pole and sent some construction material tumbling down, but luckily, nobody was hurt. The New York Daily News published a photo of the crash's aftermath with a laid-back Bill Cowher wearing sandals and a coral-colored T-shirt as he talked to police officers. Cowher appeared unfazed, but the incident definitely a change from his fiery demeanor on the NFL sidelines. Bill Cowher has been away from the crashes and the violence of the NFL for the last 6 years. He left the Steelers in 2007 after 15 seasons with the team, but is now an analyst for the NFL today on CBS.
Boy, they're going out of their way to make this sound interesting.
Yeah, well, it was just a fender bender, it seems, and yeah, they're bringing up his football career. There have been many rumors that Cowher is could be getting back into coaching. The past several years, he's been reportedly offered several jobs, but turned them down to remain in the television studio with CBS. This year, as several non-playoff-bound teams fired their head coaches, Cowher emerged as a candidate. Some NFL insiders believe that Cowher is just waiting for the right opening, a team with a strong quarterback.
What's this got to do with the accident?
Yeah, who cares about this?
You're right. They're filling the story up because there's nothing to it. Some lady in a Ford Fusion, I guess. I don't have any idea whether it was his problem or her problem, whether she caused it or he caused it. It was his Mercedes and her Ford Fusion, you know. And his car got hit and, according to the story, careened into some construction material. A Ford Fusion ain't that big of a car, is it?
I don't think so, no. So it sounds to me like he hit her. I think he was out of control. I think he might have been drunk.
Well, you don't know that.
Well, you've got to do something to brighten the story.
Yeah, okay, Bill Cowher was drunk and he hit this lady.
You got to sue you for slander.
Yeah. Bill Cowher, man, there's only been three coaches for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and since Chuck Knoll, since 1969, Chuck Knoll and Bill Cowher, and now Tomlin, is that the guy? I forget. But Cowher has been there doing that CBS job, and now he's doing the Time Warner Cable thing, and it really sucks.
Yeah, you've been saying that. Why?
Because it just stinks. I mean, it's a series of ads for Time Warner Cable. And he's playing a coach, and the people that he's coaching are the Time Warner Cable salespeople. And they all kind of look at him like he's weird, and Cowher is playing it like he really wants his team to do well. The whole thing blows, man. I mean, I swear to God, Time Warner Cable, all you're doing is making me hope for the day that, you know, wishing and praying and hoping for the day that DirecTV comes to my residence, because I don't like their service, and that's where that's at. Now, we also are going to be dealing with these guys here in the forthcoming days here from the El Pacifico, because we have a whole configuration that's going to be changing here. For those of you who are maybe not so much in the know, tonight is the last night of our late-night third-shift show, our 10p to 1a Pacific time show. Starting tomorrow night, our radio show originates at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And we'll start at 10 p.m. on the East Coast. Now, a lot of people have said to us, oh, boy, why are you doing that, Phil? The stations that were carrying you, they're going to get upset. I said, you know, we might as well do it and get it over with, because I don't want to stay at 10 o'clock and then gradually change it to 7 and then have some stations go, wait a minute, what the hell are you doing? You just, I might as well just, you know, do it and get it over with and have it be done with. So we're starting the show at 7. It will go until 10 on the Pacific Coast, 10 to 1 on the East Coast. Along with that, there's all kinds of technical configurations and things.
Well, you talk about Time Warner Cable.
Well, Time Warner Cable, they've been our internet connection, and will continue to be. We don't need, a DSL connection here, man, because I'm just getting information off the internet, and as far as our call screening goes, man, we do not need a DSL line. Because our call screening is going to originate from our studio now.
Oh, it was remote.
It was remote. Our call screening was remote in Medford. Not going to do that. We're going to have the call screening here at the El Pacifico. And other things are going to originate from here. So that's where that's. And then we have our partners, Dial Global in Denver. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be as seamless as we can make it, and it's going to be as professional as we can make it, and you, the listener out there, will not get much of an indication as to anything's been changed, quite frankly. You won't know that anything has changed other than the fact that it's a new time, starting at, as I mentioned, 7 p. to 10 p. on the Pacific Coast.
Now, a lot of people are asking a question, Mr. Henry. Why the time change?
The time change because we feel that we can reach more people. Quite frankly, we feel that we'll reach a larger audience. We feel that the show is still a nighttime show. We do a lot of material that is quite frankly, I think when at our best, our show is competitive with television. So I think 7 to 10 is a good time for it. And the other thing is, we're reaching more people. And the other, radio needs our show right now. Radio desperately needs our show, and it needs our show at an earlier time. It needs our show at full strength. Because radio, as we mentioned, folks, I mean, and I said it earlier in the show, and I think it bears repeating, there's an article in a Variety magazine, which is the preeminent trade journal in all of entertainment. Variety covers film, it covers television, on occasion it covers radio. And it just so happens it has a column about radio this week, that radio is in deep, deep trouble. Deep, dark trouble. So that's another reason. Radio needs us.
Now, let's talk about the ego that it takes to make a statement.
Oh, come on, Margaret. I've been talking to you about this for weeks, okay?
But the ego, the colossal ego that it takes to make a statement like that. Radio needs you. You don't need radio?
Frankly, no, I don't.
Oh, my. Get a load of him.
What do you mean you don't?
I don't. I don't need radio. We make our living off, I told you, we make our living off the internet. We make our living off of digital. We make our living off of our archives. That's how we make our living. That's the unfortunate reality, but I'm just laying it on you. No, I don't need radio. Radio needs us. And you know what? To the extent that we can help in keeping this medium on life support, we're more than happy.
You know, Phil, I don't think a lot of people out there are going to think you're funny. I think a lot of people are going to think you've got your nose up your own, well,
get your nose up your own R-word.
Yeah. R-word.
Yes. It starts with an R, ends with an M, and that spells trouble.
Starts with an R and ends with an...
an M. You've got your nose shoved up and twisted slightly to the left to just get the bouquet. And I think...
Okay, that's enough, Margaret.
I really think that...
Well, okay, so I got an ego. I mean, can I ask you something, folks? You can help me with this and maybe help Margaret. I'm a performer for a living. That's what I do. I perform. I'm on the radio. My name's out there. I'm, you know, talking to a whole bunch of people, right? Why wouldn't I have an ego? Why wouldn't I have a big ego? What the hell? Why would you think that guys like me don't have an ego? You're on TV, you're on radio, you're doing something like this for a living. You better have a big ego, because when you fail or when things go wrong, man, you get your ass kicked. You got everybody talking about how much you suck. You got to have a big ego.
Well, I think it's off-putting.
Off-putting? What's that?
Off-putting. O-F-T.
Is that a dessert or?
Pudding. P-U-T-T-I-N-G.
Yeah, that's a dessert.
No, that's spelled with a D.
It puts me off. It makes me feel as if someone is touching me with my back turned, and I have to turn around and swat their hand away from my buttocks. All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, I knew she'd be walking out sooner or later.
Be gone.
I'm not needed here anymore.
So in other words, what my ego makes Margaret feel as if someone's pinching her ass?
Yes. Thank you.
Well, then that's my ego. But I mean, the fact is, you know, radio needs my show. I don't mean it literally, but radio needs a lot of creative endeavors and it needs a lot of creative content. And right now it has not got it, folks. It's got a whole bunch of talk shows that are political talk shows that suck. It's got, you know, some advice shows. That's it. So in any event, that's why we've moved our show up to 7 o'clock. And do I really think I'm the saving grace? I have no idea, man. We're just trying to make a living around here. Thank you very, very much. All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show will be back here closing things out. Closing things out here for this Monday night. Closing things out here for the very last of the late night third shift shows. Because tomorrow, it all begins again at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be back for the very last of the third shift segments in a moment on the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and we didn't mention this, but the Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup Championship, the National Hockey League Championship, the Stanley Cup, in the sixth game with their win over the Boston Bruins. That was, by the way, in Boston, a 3-2 win, their second Stanley Cup in 4 years. And I was looking here at the history of the Chicago Blackhawks. And it's a long-standing National Hockey League team, the Blackhawks are. They were one of what were at one time referred to, and I guess still are referred to, as the original six. Because the Blackhawks were a part of six teams that then expanded to 12 in 1968, I believe, when they began a very aggressive expansion, the National Hockey League did, initially with six and then adding more and more. I'm looking at division. Let's see what the Stanley Cups. The first Stanley Cup they won was in 1933-34.
What's that five mean?
I don't know. It's something, man. So I guess it means they've won five. Yeah, 1933-34, 37-38, then 60-61. And that's very interesting because that was the last Stanley Cup they won until the 2009-2010 season and then this season. So... right smack dab in the middle of between the 30s and now, they had this lone Stanley Cup in Chicago. And the guy who is the legendary player, I guess, when you think of Chicago, is Bobby Hull.
Now, who's he? I've heard that name.
Yeah, Bobby Hull was a legendary Chicago Black and a legendary National Hockey League player, and he had sons that played. There's a few of them. Gordie Howe was another. Bobby Hull was another.
What about that one guy, Ebobito, or...
Yeah, Morbido?
Esposito.
Yeah.
Phil Esposito, yeah. He was a Blackhawk. So, Chicago's had its fair share of these standout players. They've even got a section here, I'm looking at Wikipedia, the original six era. And now they have won their fifth Stanley Cup. as a professional hockey team. So I wouldn't say that they're, you know, the Montreal Canadiens, when you talk about the original six, the Montreal Canadiens are the dominant team.
Well, what about the Toronto Blue Jays?
That's a baseball team.
What about the Toronto Blue Jays? No, they're not.
Yes, they are. It's a baseball team.
What's the Toronto Maple Leaf?
The Maple Leafs is the hockey team.
What?
Are you guys nuts or something? What are you going to argue with me about it?
Phil, the Blue Jay is what?
That's a baseball team. The Toronto Maple Leafs are the hockey team.
What's the big thing about a Maple Leaf? That's not going to scare you.
What do you mean scare you?
Well, you know, if you have a hockey team, don't you have to be aggressive? And
yeah.
A leaf?
Oh, well, you get out of here, man. That's the symbol of Canada, okay? So they call themselves the Maple Leafs. It's like the Philadelphia Eagles, huh?
Yeah, well, eagle, you know.
Well, the eagle, you can understand something that can gouge your eyeballs out or claw your face. But a leaf, all that's going to do is stick to you.
Yeah, because of the sap.
Yeah? Are you people serious?
No, we're just saying.
Phil, I'm serious to the extent that a leaf, the sap may stick to your cheek and may make you look like an ass. But an eagle can peck your eyeballs out of your skull, like it did Tippi Hedren and the Birds. Well, not an eagle, but...
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at all three of you because I think you all three need to be put in a hatch, a booby hatch, with a butterfly net, you know?
Oh, right. So we're nuts because we're talking about a leaf, and you think the leaf is scary.
I don't think you name teams...
No, no, yes or no, is a leaf scary?
No, it's not, and I don't think you name teams necessarily for them to be scary. You name teams so that they inspire... They inspire the fans. They inspire support. The Maple Leafs, you know, long-standing Maple Leafs, right?
What are you talking about? God, it's sad.
It really is kind of sad what's happening, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, get out of here. Sad what's happened to you. Yeah, you know, an eagle can pluck your eyeballs out, but hey, a leaf, all that does is stick to you from the sap.
Yeah, that's what it does.
Well, you know something, man? I can't go there with you, all right?
And what's a New York Ranger?
The Rangers were named by, you know, I know the answer to that. The Rangers are named the Rangers because their original owner was a guy by the name of Tex something.
Bull crap.
That's the truth. And they called them Texas Rangers, meaning Tex was the owner and they called them the Rangers. I guess you don't believe that, huh?
No, that sounds like a load too. I think you're coming up with load after load just to make us look like we've got to wipe our faces off. After the director yells cut.
You know, Margaret, and then you look at me and you ask me why I have a filthy mind.
What?
After the director yells cut, you got to wipe your face off.
Oh, I get it.
All right.
Well, that, I'm a woman.
Yeah, you're a woman with, you know, you've got just as much of a dirty mind as anybody else. Okay, so anyway, congratulations to the Chicago Blackhawks. For their win, and way to do it, baby. So they'll be having a big victory parade there. They had the victory parade for the Miami Heat today in Miami, and from judging from the tweets that I was reading, it was a hot mother in Miami. Apparently, the victory parade that was going through the city there, people were sweating their asses off, and the entire thing was a summer parade. It's a little too late in the year, man, for basketball and hockey. I just think that they got to wrap it up sooner, man, because it's goofy. All right, so as we mentioned, this is our very, very last third shift, but we aren't going anywhere. We are going to see you guys tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Pacific. Please check our website for our affiliates. Make sure that you are over on our website to see which affiliates we have. We will make regular announcements as to affiliates that we're signing. We'll make regular announcements as to the different cities that we're in. Different cities that maybe we haven't been in the past that we are going to be in now. And overall, we'll be staying in touch with you by way of philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And we'll be staying in touch with you by way of Facebook. That's facebook.com/philhenryfans, P-H-A-N-S. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/realphilhenry. But tomorrow night, join us for our new time, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, the Phil Henry Radio Network. And until then, this is Phil Henry saying, let that be a lesson to you. And thank you, Dan Northcraft, for all your great support, brother.
Hendry.